this time. Always.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Think Tank. I know, it's been so freaking long. Last time I did this was back in March for Animosity, so I do apologize. I've been workshopping some ideas, and I'll get into it towards the end, but I think we got a good plan going forward. And for those of you who don't know, Think Tank is, we could say it's bonus episodes for the Adventure Geeks. And these episodes are hosted by myself, co-host of the Adventure Geeks podcast, Eric Fagan. And these episodes are really focused more on a singular book, comic book, maybe even an author. It's the Adventure Geeks book two for the most part. And today we have a relatively new one, and by one of my favorite authors. We're going to be reviewing Stephen King's Fairy Tale that came out in September of this year. And this is the first time since Wind Through the Keyhole that Stephen King has returned to fantasy. And Wind Through the Keyhole came out, I believe, in 2013. Hold on, I have the book right here. Yeah, 2013 is the last time he's written a purely, well, not purely fantasy, but a horror fantasy genre. Oh, I'm sorry, and this came out in 2012, The Wind Through the Keyhole. So it's his first return to his fantasy horror genre that I think he's so good at doing. But this book is a mixed bag for me. It almost felt like two different books to me, and it actually doesn't even get into the fantastical elements until about page 175, and it's a 608-page book. But overall, it was good. I just feel as though he jam-packed too much into a single novel, I think, and I'm not sure if there's going to be another one following this or if this is just a standalone. But it is Stephen King's take on a fairy tale. So you can expect that there's going to be some horror elements in there. He actually does draw from a lot of the Grimm fairy tales. So, you know, the truth behind the Disney movies, basically, because for those of you who don't know, a lot of the old Disney movies were based off of these Grimm fairy tales, which were very dark in nature and had a very horrific theme to them. And this book can be no different. It's definitely a little lighthearted for a Stephen King novel. And actually, for the like I said, for the first 175 pages, it is really Stephen King at his best, building up that slow burn and making you really feel for the characters. And just to give you guys an idea of what the book is about, I'll read from the front flap of this actual gorgeous cover. The cover art's really well done. It's embossed and everything. But it follows Charlie Reed. Looks like a regular high school kid. Great at baseball and football, a decent student, but he carries a heavy load. His mom was killed in a hit-and-run accident when he was 7, and grief drove his dad to drink. Charlie learned how to take care of himself and his dad at a very young age. When Charlie is 17, he meets a dog named Radar and her aging master, Howard Bowditch. A recluse in a big house at the top of the hill with a locked shed in the backyard, sometimes strange sounds emerge from it. Charlie starts doing odd jobs for Mr. Bowditch and loses his heart to Radar. Then when Bowditch dies, he leaves Charlie a cassette tape telling a story no one would believe. What Bowditch knows and has kept secret all his long life is that inside the shed is a portal to another world. So again, for the first 175 pages, it builds off of Charlie's relationship with his dad to Mr. Bowditch, and of course, I think one of the stars of the entire novel, Radar, which is a German shepherd dog, who is on his last leg, when we meet him. or I'm sorry, her. And definitely pulls at the heartstrings because you don't know if the dog's going to make it through the whole book. But the relationship between Charlie and his dad is a really relatable one for a lot of people. Not so much me, but you know, his dad ends up drinking himself into a hole when his wife and Charlie's mom passes away because of a car accident, where Charlie's mom was on her way back from getting food at the convenience store and gets hit by a car, and is brutally killed because he, of course, in Stephen King fashion, he describes her death and that, half of her body ends up in the river. So dealing with that trauma between his dad trying to mourn the loss of his wife and Charlie's grief with both the loss of his mom and taking care of his dad, it makes Charlie a very caring person that you root for the entire story. But throughout the story, you do get glimpses of some of the bad stuff he's done, and that he's not always always such the good character that he is portrayed as. And part of what kicks this off, and he goes about helping Mr. Bowditch after he sees him hurt himself and falls off a ladder, so he can't really take care of the dog anymore. So he does odd jobs for the old man up the street, as you will. And he ends up taking care of the German Shepherd and takes over the property when Mr. Bowditch ends up passing away. This Charlie's mindset was to really help Mr. Bowditch was, when he was little, he had prayed that if God would allow his dad to recover and that he wasn't homeless, that he would basically repay his debts. And that was, in his eyes, that was helping Mr. Bowditch as much as possible. So for the first quarter of the book, it really does Stephen King does a very good job building the relationships of the characters, making you care for everybody, and really focusing on Charlie and Radar's relationship, which, of course, for anybody who's owned a dog and had to put them down, it's a struggle between putting the dog out of its misery or being a little selfish and taking as much time with the dog as possible. And that's basically what Charlie does. So he finds out that the only reason why Mr. Bowditch has, I guess, well, he finds out that Mr. Bowditch has been living for over a century. And the entire reason for that is because in this well of the worlds that is in his shed, is a kingdom by the name of Lilimar in the world of Empus. So there's a world below ours, or in another dimension. They never really explain that, but basically he goes down the well, and there's an entire another world down there. And within that kingdom is a sundial. And if you ride on the sundial, you can de-age yourself, basically. So it's almost like a take on the Fountain of Youth. And that's how Mr. Bowditch has been living all these years, and how Radar has been living all these years. So basically, Charlie is focused on getting Radar down to the sundial so that she can go back to her youth again. And from there on, it goes really into the horror fantasy of it all. And it is a beautiful love letter to the grim fairy tales, and even a bit with the H.P. Lovecraft stuff, which I have talked about before. And you can tell that Stephen King is paying homage to those who he was heavily inspired by. And I mean, I like the fantasy stuff. I really do. But they do throw a lot of characters at you for the remainder of the book. And it goes into how this world of Empus is now in the gray. And there was a disease that inflicted all of the people that live there. And it's because the royal family basically was taken over by one of the children. And basically, basically wished to plague the world because he was born with abnormalities and was treated differently. It was almost like a Cinderella kind of story where the evil stepsisters took over and the abandoned children, minus one, wanted to take revenge on the entire kingdom. And basically released this plague that kind of makes you like a zombie, so to speak. And your facial features disappear. And then there are the people called, I think, the whole bodies. And those are people that are the royal bloodline. And while they're not completely a zombie, they face abnormalities like loss of hearing, loss of sight. Leah of the Galleon, who's I guess the Cinderella of this story, has nothing but a sore for her mouth. So it does do a lot of bit in the sense of body horror that Stephen King does pretty well. And it plays a lot of on the three little pigs where I think Dora's one of them and her house is made out of wood. You have Leah's home that's farther along and closer to the castle, and that was made of stone, and I forgot who the other one was, but essentially Charlie for the next like 100 pages takes Radar into the kingdom of Lilamar to find the sundial, and the kingdom is a maze, and the way it was described I think would actually look really cool on the big screen. And when they finally find the sundial after sneaking past, you know, they had hit Stephen King's version of the Jack and the Beanstalk. So the giant that's there, and then the last half of the book, I wasn't a super big fan of just because it was like 0 to 100 real quick. Charlie ends up getting imprisoned down in Deep Maline, which is the underworld of Lilamar. And basically he's been in jail, and it's almost like a Hunger Games situation where him and a bunch of other people who are deemed as pure are basically put in a gladiatorial ring to appease the Flight Killer, who is kind of this novel's version of like an evil sorcerer type of deal. But he's like this morphed being that we find out used to be Leah's handicapped brother, and he's taking revenge and is punishing the rest of the civilization of Empus. There's a lot of cool things with the last piece of the book. There's a lot of references to Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes, which I haven't read, but I'm definitely going to be looking into it. I think if anything, this book makes me want to go back to some of the classics and either read them or reread them just to get all the bits and pieces from that were introduced in this book or featured in this book, what have you. And it does, like I said, my one thing that I actually really did like that Stephen King does better here than in other books is his ending's actually pretty solid. He actually wraps things up pretty nicely and doesn't really leave it open-ended, which in every other book I think would be awesome. But I do think that there's enough in this book to explore more, because you throw in this entire new world that Stephen King created, and you only get a little glimpse of that, and there's a lot of mystery behind, you know, there's this thing with the monarch butterflies that are these huge butterflies that fly across the sky and are like the the antithesis of the gray that's going on. He introduces this giant, like, Cthulhu-like monster towards the end that is gone within 20 to 30 pages. And it would have been cool to explore the royal bloodline before the disease spread. And there are heavy references, excuse me, of this maybe being in adjacent to the Dark Tower series, which to a degree makes sense because there are some Dark Tower lines thrown there, such as there are other worlds than these, which definitely popped out and definitely thrown in there either as a tease or on purpose. The other thing that was kind of adjacent was the Night Soldiers, which are these, like, undead soldiers that work for the Flight Killer that you kind of get drained when you touch them. And there's, like, this cold, fiery aura of them that reminded me of, what were those wolf things in, the Dark Tower? The Wolves of the Kala is what I'm thinking of, but they were a little similar in that respect. But those characters were interesting, and there was like a really almost like an arch rival feel to one of them and Charlie that didn't really pan out a whole lot. But overall, I think it was a really good return to Stephen King's fantasy genre, a fantasy horror genre. I would have liked to have seen maybe a bit more or made it a longer book. I know 600 pages is still long, but maybe just doing a sequel would have been nice, just because there's so much here that can be explored. And while I don't want him to do a whole nother Dark Tower series, because I think you can't get much better than that, in my opinion, maybe a sequel would have been nice, or like a spin-off story, especially of Leia of the Galleon being in charge of Lilamar in healing the kingdom at the end. And her character, I was actually the most fascinated with towards the end, just because of her backstory with the Flight Killer, or her brother, or also known as her brother, and her tug of war with accepting that her brother is gone and that this monstrosity has taken over, and dealing with the fact that he has now had to be killed and she has to move on from there. And Charlie, even though he was supposed to be the prince that was promised, because he weirdly had like another persona in Empus, has now left her, even though she didn't want him to stay to begin with. It was kind of like a tease that just fell flat, I guess, between him and Leia. But I guess he had served his purpose and left afterwards. Yeah, I'd like to see more of that with her in this creature, the Gogmagog, which was basically Stephen King's version of an H.P. Lovecraft monster, I guess. And it was trapped within a world below Lilamar and Empus. So there's a lot of like different worlds talk here. So I'm curious as to what Stephen King is wanting to do with this story. Now, I know that there are talks about bringing this to as a film adaptation. Back in September, they said that they were going to produce the Deadline Hollywood reported that filmmaker Paul Green Grassstone for the Jason Bourne film franchise would adapt, direct, and produce the film adaptation, which would be interesting. I think it is a very well-written story. I just think there's a lot to explore that was not explained in the book, because you also see like remnants of the city and questioned about the stories behind that. Like, there was a mermaid that was slaughtered. Obviously, it was a nod to probably the Little Mermaid. You have Red Molly, and I forgot what her mom's name was, but they were the giants that were brutal. There were far-off kingdoms that they had briefly mentioned and didn't bring them up again. But overall, I would give it like a 7.5 out of 10. Any Stephen King lover would definitely enjoy this. It's there was just the second half of the book, there was just a lot of characters thrown in that I don't do well when there's a lot of different names and characters to remember, and throwing a bunch of them all at once, because most of them are prisoners of Charlie, and I did find it a bit difficult to keep track of all of them because they were all named and they were all there. It's just not a whole lot of them did really noticeable things to remember them by, minus maybe Iota, which was the big brute of a one that helped Charlie escape the prison. But that mixed with jam-packing a lot in here and having it feel like almost two different books, but they weirdly kind of worked. I don't know how I'm all over the place with this, but the number of characters, the world building did take a bit of it. I just think there should be a sequel or an anthology series about this world that we're living, that Stephen King writes about. I 7.5 out of 10. I want to see more horror stuff, fantasy horror stuff from King, because I think that's what he does best. Even his other horror books that aren't necessarily fantasy have fantasy stuff that's thrown in there. So, the other thing too, really quick, that was kind of absent in the second half is the relationship between Charlie and Radar end up getting separated quite a bit. So, it was just a weird place for the book to lead, because Charlie gets imprisoned and then Radar escapes, and then you have that relationship absent for the rest of the novel, really. I mean, they rejoin together, but there's never more of that relationship building. So a little bit of a gripe. I expected this to be really focused on those two, and it became Charlie trying to be the prince that was promised, and how there was a different persona in there that didn't really quite make too much sense, and then that prince that was promised helped save the day, and then he was absent. So I don't know, again, 7.5 out of 10. Some somewhat minor gripes, but overall, this was a really good return to form for Stephen King in his fantasy horror genre. So, yeah, that is my review for Fairy Tale by Stephen King. Now, what I wanted to talk to you guys real quick is this is probably going to be my last Think Tank, but I only because I'm trying to do a different format. And what me and Ray had talked about quite a bit is taking our channel into YouTube. And that's mostly because we feel as though a lot of the stuff we talk about would benefit more from you guys seeing what we're talking about, whether it's the comic book panels and showing you guys this. So we think bringing that visual medium to you guys is going to be a better representation, get you guys more interested, because at the end of the day, we love talking about this stuff, but we want to share it with the rest of you. And with Think Tank, I'm thinking of also doing that in the YouTube sense. It's probably going to be titled something differently. I'm workshopping an idea of it being called Healing Through Adventure, which the videos are going to be a combination of a couple things. So one thing that a lot of the listeners who have started with us from the get-go, I appreciate you, but one of the things that we've been missing for a while is the adventure piece of it. And not so much the fictional adventure, but the hiking, the outdoor adventure stuff that we had originally started doing in collaboration with the geeky stuff. So I wanted to come up with videos that would both have the start of it would probably be a hike or an outdoor adventure that myself and Ray, myself and Ian, or myself and all the other adventure geeks out there. And then I would bring in back into my podcasting space a review of a book or a graphic novel that ties into a mental health thing. Because for those of you who don't know, I am a mental health crisis counselor. And part of what I want to bring to these videos is trying to help as many people as I can, whether it's through the hiking piece of it or the literature piece of it, and tying everything in, because I know the last few years have been rough on a lot of people, and I want to try to help people through a couple different mediums. So that is something that I'm going to start trying to do in the new year. I have to figure out all the good YouTube stuff. I know YouTube's been around for a while, but it's something that we haven't touched upon, and I think this is where we're going to go moving forward. With that being said, our audio is still going to be available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, everything like that. So that's not going away. It's just we're going to throw in the addition of some visual representation. So yeah, that's about it, guys. Thank you guys for listening again. And I'll see you guys next time.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. The Latin term for that sentiment is carpe diem.
And I know what I have to do now. Keep breathing, because tomorrow the sun will rise. Who knows what the